Good morning. My name is Crystal, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the bullying and its long-term health effects on LGBT youth. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise, and after the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. DePasquale, you may begin your conference.
Thank you. Thanks all for joining the call today. We'll be discussing the harmful effects of bullying on LGBT youth, recently highlighted by the White House Conference on Bullying Prevention and detailed in two reports we're releasing on the call today. The first is by the Family Acceptance Project, titled Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Adolescent School Victimization, Implications for Young Adult Health and Adjustment, and the brief by the Center for American Progress Action Fund, titled More Than a Bully Pulpit, Congress Must Pass Laws to Prevent Teenage Bullying in School. The Family Acceptance Project report on LGBT adolescent school victimization examines the association between reports of LGBT school victimization and young adult psychosocial health and risk behavior, while our CAPAF report links the results of the Family Acceptance Project report to the need for to pass legislation like the Student Non-Discrimination Act recently introduced by Congressman Jared Polis of Colorado, who is also on the call. If you have any questions upon the conclusion of the call, you may reach me at 202-481-8181. The full audio will be available in the press room section of our website at AmericanProgressAction.org. At this time, I would like to remind participants that this call is being recorded, and by remaining on the line, you consent to being recorded. On the call this morning, we have Congressman Polis to speak about the Student Non-Discrimination Act, the long-term effects of school bullying, and the urgency of responding to school violence and harassment of LGBT youth. He'll be followed by Dr. Caitlin Ryan and Dr. Stephen Russell of the Family Acceptance Project to discuss their research and findings. And finally, Jeff Cahealy, the director of the LGBT Research and Communications Project here at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Today, we will begin with Congressman Polis of Colorado, co-chairman of the House LGBT Equality Caucus and sponsor of the Student Non-Discrimination Act.
Hi, this is Jared Polis, and I'm very excited today to be helping introduce these two studies. The Family Awareness Project study really helps highlight the need for action and remedy at the state level and in Congress. I think for anybody who's been around a school ground, they know anecdotally about the types of things that occur and the types of bullying against gay and lesbian students and those who are perceived to be gay and lesbian. But we finally have a very definitive and well-researched paper showing demonstrative evidence supporting their hypothesis to reduce bullying in elementary and high school results in fewer health, social, and psychological issues later in life. So bullying is not just a feel-good issue that we want to reduce. It actually has a substantially negative impact on the future development of young people. The study demonstrates that student violence correlated with substance abuse, suicide rates, sexual risk behaviors, and heightened psychopathology. The study also suggests that long-term effects like increased depression and other health care issues are preventable if we can work to end LGBT victimization. The Student Non-Discrimination Act is really a critical way to do that and improve the lives of LGBT students in public schools, as well as those who are perceived to be gay and lesbian. It's based on solid precedents like Title IX, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, as well as various disability civil rights statutes. It's not just legislation that gives a remedy after the fact, but instead it has the important impact of changing district policies and getting districts involved with preventing discrimination from occurring in the first place. In Colorado, fewer than one in five students attend a school with a comprehensive bullying or anti-harassment policy, and that's actually more than many other states. We have so many stories from Colorado, stories of students who dropped out because they were victimized for being gay, started skipping school. It's become a significant risk factor, and it shouldn't be. And in many places in the country, those who are victimized are scared to go to those who are supposed to protect them for fear that they won't be helpful or don't have the tools to be helpful in the process. A brief update on where we are with the bill. It has more support than ever. We have more co-sponsors than we did last session. We're up to 132 co-sponsors, including two Republican co-sponsors. Our overall legislative plan is to add the Student Non-Discrimination Act to the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which we call ESEA. Again, studies like this help provide momentum to show that, yes, there is a real problem that's occurring. Too many would rather turn a blind eye, not only to the bullying of LGBTs, but to the bullying of all youth. I applaud President Obama for including bullying against LGBT students, as well as all other forms of bullying, in his recent conference on school bullying. The ESEA reauthorization is already underway in the Senate. We have planned that Chairman Harkin plans to have a bill heard, and the Health Committee is hoping to mark it up by this summer. And although it's not likely that we don't expect to see Senate in the chairman's mark of the initial bill, we are optimistic we can amend it in the ESEA because all but one of the Democrats on the committee are co-sponsors of the Student Non-Discrimination Act. And in the House, again, the current plan has been to do a limited ESEA reauthorization. If there's a full one that comes out of the Senate, there will be a lot of pressure on the House to produce it. And our work in the meantime, which is certainly strengthened by studies that show the need to do it, is to simply increase the number of sponsors and show that this piece of legislation will have among the top number of sponsors and supporters than any other legislation at the ESEA, which is a strong vote of confidence and support that members of the House of Representatives really care about bullying in our schools and want to do something about it. We're hoping to continue to move forward with including this in the ESEA, and in the meantime, we're using studies like the Family Awareness Project to build awareness among our colleagues to help garner support for the Student Non-Discrimination Act.
Thank you. Dr. Ryan, can you begin?
Yes, thank you. I want to thank the Center for American Progress and Congressman Paulus and all of you for joining us. I'd like to give you a little context for this study. The Family Acceptance Project is a research, education, intervention, and policy project that's affiliated with San Francisco State University. It focuses on decreasing risk and promoting well-being for LGBT youth in the context of their families as well as schools and communities. We collaborate with Dr. Russell and other researchers, providers, and organizations to carry out this work. We're using this and our other research to help develop the first evidence-based model to help ethnically diverse families decrease rejection and increase support for their LGBT children. And this actually includes helping diverse families learn how to advocate for their children in schools and teaching them how to manage school victimization. We started the Family Acceptance Project nearly a decade ago. It's based on my earlier work on health and mental health needs of LGBT youth. I noticed that no one had studied gay and transgender adolescents in the context of their families. But then we knew most about what happens to youth in schools, but we needed to understand how to support LGBT children and adolescents in a broader context, not just individuals and students, but in relationship to their families, faith traditions, and ethnic communities. And we needed to understand how diverse families with LGBT children interface with schools. So one of the important aspects of this new study is that it helps us extend our awareness of victimization and bullying by helping us realize that LGBT-related victimization during adolescence affects young people in later life. This may seem intuitive, but it's very important to empirically document the relationship between school victimization that's specifically related to sexual orientation and gender identity during adolescence with health and adjustment in adulthood. In this latest study, we found significant health problems in later life when this occurs. With prior research, we found that gay and bisexual males and transgender young adults reported higher levels of school victimization than lesbian and bisexual young women. And young adults who reported high levels of LGBT school victimization during adolescence were 5.6 times more likely to report having attempted suicide and to report an attempt that required medical care, 2.6 times more likely to report clinical levels of depression, and more than twice as likely to have been diagnosed with a sexually transmitted disease and to report risk for HIV infection compared with peers who reported low levels of school victimization. We also found that LGBT young adults with low levels of school victimization did much better as young adults. They had higher levels of self-esteem, greater life satisfaction, better overall social integration than those who reported more victimization. These findings really underscore the high cost of victimization related to LGBT identity, and they show the urgent need for federal protections that would be provided through this Student Non-Discrimination Act that's sponsored by Congressman Polis and the Safe Schools Improvement Act. And the variability in our findings show the range of school experiences and therefore the need for these consistent protections for all students. At the same time, schools are housed in neighborhoods and communities. We know a lot about, from our project, what happens in families when LGBT youth are victimized in school, and that families really need support to understand these issues. We know also that families have not been integrated into services for LGBT youth, so we're developing a new family approach to help support LGBT young people across all the systems of care, and we'll distribute that to communities across the country when we've completed that work. Thank you very much, and I'll be happy to take questions.
Okay, the question-answer session will be at the end. So, Dr. Russell, can you please begin?
Sure. I will add to the thanks for everyone being here and also to Caitlin's remarks just by providing some of the scientific context. And as Caitlin had mentioned, we know that there's strong research evidence that anti-LGBT bullying and other kinds of discriminatory harassment make a difference for adolescent health. And what's new about this study is, what's unique about the study is tracing that connection across the early lifespan and showing the lasting influence of anti-LGBT bullying on a broad range of health indicators up to a decade later. So not only depression, which we've known about a long time in the adolescent years, but also sexual risk, like STD diagnosis and HIV risk, and also serious risk for suicide. So not just thinking about suicide, but also attempting and suicide attempts that require medical intervention. And so the study connects with a growing body of research that makes the case that for LGBT young people, what happens in adolescence sets the stage for health later on, but also that school and community context make a difference, and that unsupportive environments for LGBT youth have direct health consequences that last over the lifespan. So the study is important in my view because it provides further evidence to support what we already know about policies and strategies that reduce bullying and promote safety for all students. So specifically, at the most basic level, clear and inclusive anti-discrimination and anti-harassment policies that include LGBT identity and gender expression are what we need in schools. And this is really the heart of the Student Non-Discrimination Act and its companion legislation, the Safe Schools Improvement Act. And over the last decade, multiple studies have now shown that policies like these at the state and local levels make a difference for students' experiences of anti-LGBT bullying and overall school safety, which points to the importance of this federal legislation. So I'll stop there and would be glad to take additional questions.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Ryan and Dr. Russell, for your terrific work helping us to better understand an issue that is so visible in our country right now. And thank you, Congressman Polis, for your leadership in the House and your commitment to making sure LGBT youth and young adults have the same opportunities and chances for success and well-being as their peers. I'm going to make two very brief points, and then we'll open the question and answer session. My first point is about the need for better data on the LGBT population. The work that Dr. Ryan and others do at the Family Acceptance Project is incredibly helpful to me as an advocate because it is research-based and data-driven. It doesn't just describe what happens to the LGBT population. It explains why we see different outcomes related to overall health and well-being that other research suggests. The power and importance of data should not be ignored, and it shows why the LGBT movement needs to push for wider data collection efforts, including more support for projects like Dr. Ryan's and also through key federal surveys. Many public federal surveys ask a wide range of demographic information of the respondents, but most of these surveys do not include questions on sexual orientation and gender identity. Adding those two questions would revolutionize what we know about the LGBT population, as well as the best policies to help eliminate the disparities we anecdotally see right now. My second point is that with marriage equality and Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal often dominating the headlines, it's really important to remember that the gay and transgender agenda is much bigger than those two important issues. It includes things like bullying and youth homelessness and access to good and affordable health care. It's about securing equal opportunities in the workplace for gay and transgender workers, achieving economic security, and being able to feel safe on the streets and in our communities. It includes figuring out the best ways to help families accept and support their LGBT youth, which is what Dr. Ryan's team so ably does. and it even includes something as wonky and unsexy as data collection. In other words, there's a lot of work to do, and it will not end when a few pieces of even landmark legislation are passed into law. It's a slow, long fight, but I'm confident that the good guys will win in the end. That's all for me, so now I'd like to turn it over to Christina for the question and answer.
Thank you. Before we open the line for questions, I'd like to remind press that the full audio will be available on our website at AmericanProgressAction.org. If you have any questions or would like more information on the content of this call or to speak with any of the presenters on the line, you may contact me at 202-481-8181 or CDIPASQUALE at AmericanProgressAction.org. Operator, could you please open the line to questions?
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Chris Johnson with Washington Blade.
Hi there. Yeah, I want to ask a question about another bill that's pending in Congress that hasn't come up so far in the conversation. It doesn't seem to be getting a lot more a lot of attention compared to the Student Non-Discrimination Act or the Safe Schools Improvement Act, and that is the Tyler Clementi Higher Education Anti-Harassment Act. It's sponsored by Frank Lautenberg in the Senate and Rush Holt in the House. I'm just kind of wondering why this bill isn't getting as much discussion as the other two bills. It seems to be like the ugly stepchild of the anti-bullying, anti-harassment family of legislation in Congress. So I'm just wondering why that seems to be out of place, and if there's any chance of getting that incorporated into ESDA without reauthorization as that moves forward.
This is Jeff from CAP, and I'm not sure if Congressman Polis also wants to weigh in, but I think that a lot of, you know, in the past, the bills that have really been dealt with are the two that are primarily being talked about right now. And you're right that there's also the Tyler Clementi Act out there. And I think that as, you know, the bills in general move forward, there's going to be a lot of debate and discussion about, you know, what they look like in the end. So I think that it's in the Tyler Clementi bill is in the mix of things people are talking about, just because it's not necessarily being written about or kind of being pushed out in press releases. It's definitely part of the mix of the conversation. So I think that, you know, that's important to keep in mind. And again, I'm not sure if Congressman Polis has additional insight into that.
Yeah, this is Jared Polis. So it would not be included in ESEA. That's just the through 12th grade piece. It would be a different area of federal law. This would, as you know, require colleges and universities to receive federal aid to implement a policy that prohibits any type of student harassment. Now, many universities already do, and of course many universities have terrific LGBT resource centers. There's some that don't, that do receive federal money that this would apply to. But the legislative vehicle would be a different one than ESEA reauthorization.
Okay.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star 1. At this time, there are no questions in queue.
Okay, well, we can conclude the call. If you'd like to ask your question offline, you can give us a call here at CAPF at 202-481-8181. Oh, it appears that we have a follow-up question from the Washington Blade, so I'll allow that to go through.
So when President Obama said he wanted to see education reform on his desk before the new school year starts this fall, I want to ask Congressman Polis, I think it's a realistic expectation for getting education reform done. And if not, what do you think is the timeline for moving forward with that?
I would say the odds are against it getting done in time, but it's certainly possible. Chairman Harkin has said he wants to hold markups in June. If that succeeds and they achieve, you know, 65, 70 votes in the Senate, it comes to the House. It's certainly possible that the House would consider it in July before our August recess. That would require the commitment of Speaker Boehner, the president, and Harry Reid, as well as Mitch McConnell, to bring that to the floor. They certainly haven't said anything definitively in the other direction, but it would take a remarkable confluence of events to get everything done in the next 2.5 months here. It's a very complex area of law, and it'll begin with Senate markups in June, that Chairman Harkin has indicated he plans to hold.
Okay, thank you. With that, we'll conclude the call. And if you'd like the audio, again, that will be on our website at AmericanProgressAction.org in the press room. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.